This is the Loftus Party Podcast. A long time ago, we started a song, and we're bringing it back. Nazi, Nazi, Nazi! Russia, Russia, Russia! Russia, Russia, Russia! We're back! Hey, Liberty Gypsy is back on the line.
Hello.
We're back after the We're back after the holidays, and we're back singing the Russia, Russia, Russia song in full effect. We got the Flynn going down. They make it sound like it's the end of the world, yeah?
Oh, yeah, he was going to throw Trump under the bus, and Trump asked him directly, according to a what?
An unnamed anonymous source. I'm Brian Ross. The world will end at midnight! I don't even know what I'm doing. It's all the end of the world. It's all – now, here's the crazy thing, and this is where we come in as the incredibly upbeat, lively, let's have a great time podcast. Like, I don't know who to believe. I can tell you who I want to believe. I want to believe the people – where that say that Flynn is just in trouble for lying to the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's really not that big of a deal. And then I also want to believe the people who are saying that Flynn has a good case for entrapment.
Oh, really?
Yes, because if the FBI – here's the conjecture, the backstory on this. The FBI, and this is all based on the dossier. So this is the weird part of it. And this is the part of politics that I kind of like, that it's just so just freaking bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like the Clinton camp picked up where the Never Trumpers left off. And they're like, yeah, come on, let's do this dossier. Get us the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
They got some dirt that was made up, fabricated, whatever. Then they handed that to the FBI. And the FBI is like, ooh, we should investigate this. So then the FBI starts wiretapping people. They're mm-hmm. listening to conversations, blah, blah, blah. So they knew that Flynn had talked to Kislyak or whoever. You know, they knew about this. Because then they ask – then they go to Flynn and they go, hey, so what'd you talk to Kislyak about? So – but they already knew. And he's like, oh, I didn't really talk to him about this. And they go, really? Is that your final answer? He's like, yeah, it's my final answer. Then they come back like, okay, you're in trouble for lying to the FBI.
That's just dirty pool.
That's exactly what it sounds like
that's
to
me. That's just – first of all, this dossier ever being handed to the FBI is almost a farce on its face, right? I mean, just reading it, it read like a – like some kind of international spy novel, for starters.
Yeah.
You know, okay, so they give it to the FBI. The FBI's like, oh, this is interesting. Let's take a look at this. The fact that they used it to get FISA warrants to monitor the staff of a current presidential candidate is still just floors me.
It totally does. And for people like Brian Ross mm-hmm. from ABC, we'll get to that in a little bit. But like when Trump is the president elect, he's mm-hmm. he's the candidate. He's going to be the guy who's doing it. When he asks Flynn, hey, reach out to the Russians for me. I'm going to want to talk to them about ISIS, or I'm going to want to talk to them about Syria.
Right.
That's I don't think that's an impeachable offense.
No, that's actually
that's
actually very common with an incoming administration. You start building your relationships before you come into office. You can't promise anything. You can't say, you know, the quid pro quo kind of stuff, but you can certainly start talking about the things that you're going to want to work on once you take the position, which is exactly what it sounded like he did.
Yeah. So I guess – so that's what I want to have happen. I mean, like I've got skin in the game. That's what I don't want a government that's like doing shady blah, blah, blah. So I'll just tell you – I'll be honest right now. That's what I want mm-hmm. to be the truth. Now we'll see what the truth actually is. However, I guess the punishment for what Flynn has done, if that's indeed the case, I think he owes him $600. Like that's the fine.
Wow.
It's not even $1,000. And they're like – and then you've got this Brian Ross, and it was just completely – and this should terrify everybody. When they handed – they got that clip of Joy Behar when they're like breaking news, and they hand her the little blue card and she's like, he's going to testify against Trump. They're all going – like to take such delight in mm-hmm. that. And then first of all, it wasn't the case. It was a false story. The stock market was affected. I think you've got a possible lawsuit. But man, oh man, if it were true, if all of this stuff were true, Russia, 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 I wouldn't take great delight in it. Like if they handed me a card and they said, you know, we just found out, you know, that ex-President Barack Obama is actually an agent of the Venusian Galaxy Ticonderoga killer mafia, I wouldn't be like, yeah, we got him. I'd be like, holy crap. Who's the Venusian Ticonderoga killer mafia? You know, I'd like, we have problems.
Oh, my God. So, but we could probably frame Stephen Colbert's timeline with the initial story from Brian, though. I mean, he must have. I told you it was going to go down. I told you I had all the information out there. I mean, his rant was just crazy. He must have been like so freaking happy just to be crushed the next day.
Yes, and then also, watch this dude from Meet the Press, just like, yeah, okay, it's connect the dots, people. It's connect the dots. We've only got a couple more dots left till it all comes dinky dang.
And really, it was a big sad nothing. Stuff. Nothing.
We will see, but that's what it's looking like to me. And that's and then there's friends of mine and friends of ours who are posting things on Instagram, and they're like, here's how you tell real news from fake news. This is the exact. So they got there's a picture of MSNBC talking about this breaking news, and here's what's going on, and Flynn is going to testify against Trump. And then the other side of the screen is Fox News, the Five, talking about, hey, what's on your Christmas wish list? it's like what? And they're like, it looks, when you look at it, it's like, whoa, Fox is like trying to bury the story. Maybe they think that it's not as big of a story as MSNBC. Maybe right. That's what your screen grab captured.
Well, and not just what your screen grab captured, but if you take a look at last week between ABC, right, and yes. To grab that kind of anonymously sourced article and publish immediately as breaking – right?
Yep.
You have to have an agenda. You have to.
Oh my goodness, yes. Great you know? Point.
And
great
then,
point.
And then as you're like looking later in the week, did you see what the New York Times did?
Oh, are you talking about the thing where they're like, pick up the phone and call your senator?
Yeah, the New York Times editorial board took over the New York Times Twitter profile all day one day this week to tweet out how to contact your senators and ask them to vote against the tax bill.
Yes.
And you now, want to tell us you're not biased?
And this is great. This is wonderful. I'm so glad you brought up the whole New York Times thing. Here's what happened, you guys. I feel like we've got a bunch of new listeners. Mm-hmm. Welcome to everybody. But here's what happened. A few years ago, I started hosting the show on TV called The Flip Side with Michael Loftus, blah, blah, blah. And you start learning. You don't start learning. You just kind of have a larger awareness. And I'm telling you right now, just keep your eye open. Just keep your eyes open. I'm not going to try to convince anybody that this or that or this. But the more I met Cheryl Atkison from CBS News, and she gave me her book, and I read it, and I have come to the belief that I am being steered in a particular direction. As a citizen of the United States, the news, the mainstream media, I know it's going to sound like Sean Hannity, they're definitely trying to steer us in a direction. Mm-hmm. I don't like being steered. And that's what this podcast is about. That's what the TV show is about. That's what the website is partially about. I don't like being steered. So we have to call it. You have to call it out when you see it. Like, don't tell me how to think. When you start using your social media platform as a call to arms, that's not an opinion. That's a call to arms. Like, pick up your phone and call your senator.
Yeah, but
that's crazy.
I mean, I've been participating in and doing online activism for a couple of years. They did exactly what we did when the vote on the Trans-Pacific Partnership and Trade Authority was going on. Their timeline looked just like the activist group I was working for when we were trying to affect legislation, but we were an activist group.
Yes.
You know, we weren't shy about it.
Yeah, you weren't saying, hi, we're an unbiased news organization.
No. We were like, this is terrible. Please call your congressman. But I mean, to watch that, knowing what I've done in managing activists and activist platforms and issues activism, I'm like, they just turned into Act Blue.
Act Blue. I've never even heard of Act Blue.
Act Blue is like what Acorn, and then it was something else, and now it's Act Blue. They've morphed.
Here's the one that, and this isn't even on my list of things to discuss. It just popped into my head because of what you said. So here we go. Have you seen this thing? This is like the worst radio ever. Did you see? But President Obama, former President Obama, started this thing. I think it's ACA. I forget what the initials are. Mm-hmm. I apologize. And he's just going around whenever President Trump leaves a country, a couple weeks later, Obama shows up and meets with the leaders of these countries. Yep. Like, he's literally just like hopscotching the globe, just following Donald Trump around, meeting with the leaders. What the heck is that? I've never heard of any president. Now, maybe they all do it. Maybe I'm just brand new to this. I find it deeply disturbing.
Nope. George W. Bush went home and started painting. Bill Clinton started a foundation and did speeches, but he wasn't acting as, you know, an ambassador-ish of the U.S. And I guess at one point during Clinton's administration, Jimmy Carter did ask for permission to meet with the head of state. And it was granted, but he asked the sitting president, and they were from the same party. I think this is pure undercutting. I think it's ridiculous. I think he should be called out for it. 100%.
Especially when he has a history of being caught on open mics, you know, talking to Russians like, hey, I'll be reelected in a little bit. Just give me some time, then I'll be able to work with you.
Right.
So, like, he has a track record of saying, hey, just hang in there. Things are a little crazy right now, but we'll get things back to normal. That really is what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
That he's going around to these foreign leaders and going, listen, I know Trump just came in here and was talking a bunch of stuff, but listen, he's going to be gone in 4 years. So don't worry about it. Just hang tight.
Here's the other thing. When Trump goes on these foreign visits to Poland, to the Far East, etc., he does very well and he gets stuff done.
which makes what Obama's doing that much worse.
I find it very disturbing.
The other
thing that he wanted that he didn't get, he wanted to be general director of the UN.
Well, maybe. I think I don't know. You see crazy conspiracy theories about shadow governments and shadow governments. However, when he's literally bebopping around the globe going, hey, don't worry about it. That kind of sounds like a shadow government to me.
Probably just telling him, don't worry about it. Michelle's going to run in 20. We'll be back.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we need to make some hay while the sun shines. And that is exactly, I had a Peter Brady moment. What the Republicans did, I did a vlog about a month ago saying, Republicans, you got to get it done on taxes.
Yep.
And they did. I didn't even attempt to read it. I don't know what's in there. I don't know what happened. Here's what I know. The government's going to get less money from people.
Yay!
That's a win.
That's
a
fabulous
win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I love how people are so concerned about the debt now. Welcome aboard.
Welcome aboard, people
who are worried about the debt.
Mm-hmm.
Grab a paddle. We've been rowing for a long time.
Right.
So let's get in there and solve it. Here's my first piece of advice for all my fantastic Democrat listeners. Thanks for being concerned. Let's figure out a way to spend less money. How about that?
Awesome.
That's the one that's what cracks me up about all this. That never comes up. They're always like, oh, tax cuts are bad. Tax cuts are bad. We can't do this and we can't do that. Okay, so if you're worried about the debt and tax cuts are bad, you must do what? I'm going to lead you. Spend less money, just like every other mofo in the nation.
And Bob,
spend less money.
And Bob Corker is a douche.
Bob Corker, what a ginormous disappointment that guy is. What was his problem? Well,
He wanted to put an automatic tax increase trigger. If the debt reached a certain point, then your taxes would go up so that they didn't have to spend less money. You should have heard Rand Paul's summary of this thing. I mean, it was spot on.
Rand Paul. Hey, did we ever figure out what happened to that guy?
Dude.
Rand Paul?
He had a ton of broken ribs. His neighbor, like, freaking attacked him.
Well, he had 6 broken ribs.
Mm-hmm.
And they make it sound like – there's a couple things. And we don't have the time, and I'm sorry for even bringing it up. It's kind of like a real, like, Dick Tease kind of a moment. I still don't feel like we got the straight story on Rand Paul.
Me neither.
It sound like he was out doing yard work and then bang, and maybe that's what happened. This guy just tackled him and broke his ribs. I want to get the straight story out of that. Here's the other story that I want. So I'll invite the listeners to do a little bit of research and send it in. Like, how is there no video on the Las Vegas shooter?
All creepy.
I know, and they're really trying to demonize the conspiracy theorists and the people who are trying to figure out what really happened. However, there's a couple things that are just really, really hinky about that whole story. We've all been to Vegas. I go to Vegas at least once, twice a year. I do stand up at the MGM. Everything is videotaped.
Oh yeah,
everything.
It's a casino.
How do they not have video of this guy? Why aren't they releasing it? What is going on? And then here's the other thing, and I think this is true. I don't want to be like fake news Mike. However, they say the guy had a laptop in the room with him. However, the laptop was missing its hard drive. So if you have a laptop without a hard drive, you got a paperweight. Like, why would you carry that around? There's that one's hinky. That one is hinky,
There's just the girlfriend was hinky.
The brother who's the pedophile, the dad who's the bank robber. There is a movie here, and I need more facts. I'm a big time looky-loo. However, we got off track. The tax thing is great. I'll take it. And it's just like what I said in the video. I don't care that it's not 100% of what we want. It's less money going into the government.
If it
can keep the economy cranking right along and help out small businesses, good, good, good.
If I understand correctly, the individual mandate for Obamacare is gone. We like that.
Or will be. I guess they have to do like, what, one more step? But that'll be great.
Yeah.
If they can get rid of the individual mandate.
And the estate tax that you hate.
I do.
Death tax.
That's the worst. It's killing small farmers. That's the thing that, like, to me, is very like, this is some that should be a very liberal, emotional, you know, hey, I'm a Democrat, hear me roar moment. Like, if you own a bunch of land that's been in your family for years, and all of a sudden the government goes, hey, that's worth $7 million. You owe me $3.5 million, like today, because your dad died. That's criminal. That's just criminal, criminal, criminal.
Criminal, I hate the estate tax. That money has already been taxed.
Yeah, it's total double jeopardy. I don't know what. Oh, Corker. That's what I love. It's like, now we know. Now we know. Get that dude out of there.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a – oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. So much to talk about. This is great. There's like an energy. There's a boom, boom, boom. We got a special guest coming up on the show later. That's the new thing we're doing I'm very excited about. And I want to spend like 2 minutes on this North Korean defector. If you haven't seen the clip, you have to go watch it. The guy, he's in the army. in a Jeep. It's like out of a movie. He's driving down the road. The other army guys are chasing him. The Jeep goes into the grass. He hops out and he tries to run away. They shoot this guy. He got shot like 5 times. They chased him over the border. It's drama, drama, drama. The guy is now in a South Korean hospital. He's getting better. It's like miraculous. Shot 5 times. Mm-hmm. His body is infested with parasites, malnutrition, the whole nine. But he's going to live. He's going to make it. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how crappy communism is. That's how crappy that people take these kind of risks. Like, I think that every time Bernie Sanders starts talking about it's the end of America, it's the end of America, these tax cuts, you know, we got to go socialism. This is what you get in socialism. Socialism, they're like, hey, you might want to start eating rabbits. Communism, they're like, you're infested with parasites. We're going to shoot you 5 times. And you're like, I don't care. I got to get out. I got to get out.
Well, just the whole you can't leave or we'll kill you.
Yes.
Hello.
We're not even mentioning that.
You know,
don't try to leave or we'll kill you.
I mean, you would think that where you choose to reside is at least somewhat, you know, voluntary if you do the appropriate things to get out of where you are. But there is no appropriate process to emigrate somewhere from North Korea. You can't.
I tell you, I'm doing a thing in my stand-up now because I'm living on Long Island. Mm-hmm. And so the Long Island audiences appreciate this. I'm like, is there no way to get off this island without paying somebody money? Like, I have not found a way to leave my home in Long Island without paying somebody money. Like, every time you want to get to the mainland, you want to go to Manhattan, you want to go to Pennsylvania or Jersey, you owe somebody. That seems I think there's like the 52nd Street Bridge is the only one. So my joke is I need to make friends with – I think I found one.
Oh, good.
I'm like, I've never lived somewhere where you have to pay to leave and then you have to pay to come home. So my joke is this. I go, I need to make friends with somebody who's got a boat so I can have a get out of jail free card. And then I'd like it to be a hot chick who is allergic to clothes and needs my dick to live.
Michael.
It's hilarious.
Oh.
Allergic to clothes and needs my dick to live.
Mm. That,
it's funny, wholesome comedy. You guys, we're going to be right back. We got a special guest on the show today. And then we're going to talk a little bit of pop culture and what's going on. Stick around. We've got Joe DeVito here. You're probably asking yourself, that name seems familiar. I think I've seen that guy on TV. I think he's made me laugh. Guess what? You're right. It's that Joe DeVito. Joe, first of all, say hello to the wonderful listeners at home.
Hello. Hello. And yeah, you may be familiar with my work if you enjoy watching TV between the hours of 3 and 4 a.m.
You know what? That's Red Eye. You were on Red Eye
yes.
a lot. Did a lot, but that's good. That's fantastic. That's how you get the name out there.
Yeah, you can pretty much be exposed to me on media, anything that's not prime time.
I try to stay away from that as well. It's so predictable.
Yeah,
that's what everybody expects it.
Yeah.
So you were how many episodes of Red Eye do you think you were on?
Oh, geez. I did that show, I think, starting in their second year. I'd say at least 150.
Get out of town. Really?
Yeah. You know, it's hard to keep track. I'd say between that and the Kennedy show, it's definitely over 150.
Wow. Wow. I have not done the Kennedy show yet. I recently did the Tucker Carlson program.
Oh, how was that?
Well, you know what? I did Tucker Carlson when Tucker was hosting, and I don't think I was his cup of tea. I think I'm a little bit too everyman for his sensibility. He's got that Mark Stein guy on there who's a little bit, you know, Mark Stein has the accent and he's a little bit more, it's just a classier kind of a guy. I'm not classy enough. So Brian Kilmeade was hosting the other day and he had me on. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, cool.
And then I did Varney. I did... which is Varney was great. Varney and Company on Fox Business. That dude is all right. That dude is all right. However, I'm not close to the numbers that you were putting up.
Yeah, well, you know, I started doing Red Eyes when Greg Gutfeld was hosting it, when they first began. And
yeah,
they were trying to, they really trying to figure out what the program was. What was nice was that they all did it. No one was monitoring them. It's almost like the higher ups didn't bother them because they assumed no one was watching the program. So they got to kind of figure out what their groove was. And I loved it. I owe them a lot of gratitude because I sort of learned how to be on TV from them and how to do panel and all that stuff that people forget that that's a whole other skill set. And they did have me host Red Eye twice, and it gave me grudging respect for local news anchormen who have someone talking into their ear while they're saying something different. I found that very difficult.
That is hilarious, because I've been down that similar road. It's easy to make fun of, like, that poor news anchor who's got – then you don't realize he's got a person in his ear warning him that the 30-second thing is coming up, and then you got to throw it to Janine, who's down in Fort Lauderdale. Meanwhile, it'll be interesting. That is a total skill set.
Yeah, and you have to read off the teleprompter and still try and say something halfway entertaining. What I learned was that I can do one thing at a time. That's very limited. And you add a second thing, I start sweating. So yeah, so that was but that was pretty cool that they even gave me the opportunity. And I actually filled in for Tom Shalhoub on his new radio show, and that was a lot of fun because that's 3 hours. I don't have to worry about looking at the wrong camera, so I enjoy that a lot.
Yeah, I want to talk about that really quickly with Red Eye. Did you, like, were you out doing stand-up in a club and someone saw you, or what was the origin story? How'd you meet Greg Gutfeld, blah, 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 that kind of thing?
Sure. Well, what they did was they put out a request to different managers to have stand-up comedians come in. And in typical stand-up fashion, almost all of them would show up completely unprepared. And yeah, it's really pathetic the way, and for me, being a nerd and a former journalist and all that, when someone said, here are the topics we're going to discuss, I would over prepare because I didn't want to look stupid. And a lot of guys would come in and think, well, I'll just riff, and it would expose them for being the kind of uninformed loudmouth that they were. So
yeah,
what happened was the rotation of comics for the show got smaller and smaller. And what's kind of cool about that is when it happens, you have the audience wants to see the regulars.
Yeah.
And one of the things I liked about me was that, Greg and I shared a very, that's when I realized, oh, I'm a libertarian. That's what these conclusions I've arrived at. That's what this equals. So it was fun to be on that show and come in and same as I am on the other shows where I can express my opinion and hopefully say something that is an intelligent way of phrasing it and still get some laughs. So it's something that I don't really get to do in the act too much, which is why I enjoy it.
That's hilarious. So you just went on there as a comedian expressing your opinion and then realized through doing that, wow, I have this political stance. Is that?
Yeah, that's because I always had things where, you know, when I was younger, I was a liberal, I guess you'd say liberal with a small L, you know?
Sure.
And I started to realize, well, these people seem like pains in the ass too, because the conservatives always have the reputation as the killjoys, as the, the bad guys from Animal House, the Doug Niedermeyer types and all that. But then I started to realize that, these people who call themselves liberal are not particularly open-minded, and they're even more annoying. So to me, it was, I didn't want to listen to any lefty commie crap, and I didn't go for super religious uptight stuff. So as I pieced together that I had no problem with gay people getting married, I have no problem with gay people at all. And I also like a strong national defense, but I believe the First Amendment. So all these little pieces started to come together. And then once I saw what that puzzle, you know, the picture revealed itself when I had enough puzzle pieces.
Yeah, that is a very similar experience to me. And like, weird. It's like people always want to put you in a corner. That's the first thing they want to do is go, he's the conservative comic. And it's like, no, I'm the comic who happens to be, and I don't even like conservative, and I don't like libertarian. Like, I don't, and they're always so eager to hit the buzzer to, like, because then they think that they know you. Okay, he's that, so I can disregard him now. It bums me out.
Oh, yeah.
I just feel like I'm a comedian first, and I'm political second.
Well, here's a sad thing that I found is that most people don't enjoy having thoughts.
Say what?
They don't enjoy having thoughts. They don't like thinking. So if you can say to them, that's why stereotypes are so popular, because it saves people the trouble of firing anything between the synapses in their brain. It's just easy to say, that guy is this. No, but it's true, isn't it?
That's hilarious. It saves people. It's a stereotypes are the ultimate time saver. That's hilarious.
It's true. It's you just get to put your pegs in whichever hole you're most comfortable with. And I've noticed that, you know, where I noticed that is when there's people who meet me and when they hear my last name is DeVito, they're compelled to ask if I'm related to Danny DeVito. They cannot stop themselves from asking that. And whenever someone says that, I realize, this is a person who's not good at thinking, because they're not able to understand that people can have the same last name. It's not a mind-blowing concept. But yeah, and I find that, I'm sure you hear this, if you're a libertarian, people are like, what do you have against Rhodes? People have this obsession that libertarians are against Rhodes for some reason.
Why do you hate Rhodes? That's the other one. Like whenever someone who wants less government is on Chris Matthews is like, so you hate the EPA? It's like, no, I'm okay with some environmental policies. Like, I'm not all for litter, but yeah, that's too funny. So why do you hate Rhodes? Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
I tell them I don't like Rhodes because wherever this annoying person came from, they use a road to get to me. To irritate me. So I would like that specific road to be shut down.
All right. You snuck something into the conversation that you come from the world of journalism. When did you start? When did you make the transition from journalist to stand up comedy? How did that come about?
Well, I was doing two things. When I left college, I was very directionless, but I knew that I liked writing and I had some skill for it. I ended up writing for small ad agencies and marketing and public relations and doing a little bit of journalism on the side. And it was one of those things where after a couple of years, I sort of developed a specialty in direct mail writing, direct mail marketing pieces and advertising. So I was doing that and I was working for Book of the Month Club in Manhattan. And it's so funny because when I tell people I wrote direct mail for Book of the Month Club, that's like saying I was a milkman, because none of that exists anymore.
Yeah.
He worked for Amalgamated Buggy Whips. Yes, promotional department. So I was writing funny stuff on the side just to keep my brain entertained. And one day after work, just hanging out with the coworkers, telling stories about my family. And they said, you got to try stand-up. And I was very, very afraid. And a coworker signed me up for a class, and she took the class with me to make sure I would go and I wouldn't chicken out.
Wow. So was the coworker secretly wanting to be a stand-up as well?
No, she just was a funny person. I mean, she did the graduation show and then she was like, yeah, that's it for me. And it was one of these things where it was either Learning Annex or Seminar Center. So it was two classes and then your graduation show. So pretty much all they taught me was to not soil myself when I was on stage.
Step one, but don't crap yourself.
Yes, which is always good advice. And I survived it and I thought, this was interesting, because I noticed how I could write things that if you read them, you'd crack up. But it was just different when you go on stage and say it. And I thought, all right, I would like to figure this out. And then about 2 years in, I thought, I think I want to be a stand-up comic. And I was, I was in my 30s. I was a grown man.
Yeah.
And I think around the two-year mark, I was considering, well, by the end of this year, I'm going to make a decision. And then I got laid off from my job and thought, okay, here we go. So I freelanced for a while, and then I started to work. And I think it was 2006 I did Montreal and the Comedy Central show. And then 2007 I did Last Comic Standing. And then that was semifinals of Last Comic Standing was enough exposure so that I could go full time. And now Book of the Month Club doesn't even exist anymore. So there's really no turning back because my industry doesn't exist.
I got to tell you, I had no idea you were on Last Comic Standing. What was that experience like? Were you in the house and everything?
No, I did it the year, I think it was season 5 in 2007. Okay. And that was the year they went to the English speaking countries. So out of the thousands of people they saw in the US, Canada, England, and Australia, I made the top 32.
Wow.
Which was pretty good. Yeah. I mean, I was about, I guess, 5 or 6 years in at the time.
And dude, that is courage, man. That is courage. Fun to know fact. My managers at the time, when Last Comic Standing started season one, they were producers on it. And I had just moved out to LA, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, should I do that? Should I do that? And they looked at me and they were like, no. Don't do it, because it's all, they're like, it's a reality show, it's casting, and they're like, if you were X, Y, and Z, if you were like the you know, this is not what they said, this is a bad example, but if you were like the homophobic white power comic, you would probably do well, because you'd be the opinionated villain, if like, but like, they said, don't do it, and then I was watching, because I'm a comedian, I would see the auditions, you know, those first couple weeks where this like, and I see all these guys were hilariously funny, these crazy good comics, and they weren't even getting a call back. And I'm like, wow, I made a really good call. Not doing that. And literally, it was just, I didn't have the balls to do it. God bless you for even participating.
It took them a couple of seasons to figure it out, because I think what happened in the early ones was very much focused on the house, that they everything leading up to that was to just get comics in a house and see what happened. So it really wasn't a finding the best comedian show.
But then absolutely. What happened?
Yeah, because here's what people don't realize with reality shows, especially the competitions, that you can laugh at bad dancing, you can laugh at bad singing, you can laugh at any other thing that's bad except for bad comedy. You don't laugh at it.
No.
So I think what happened was the year after I did it, they decided to load up on the freak shows. And then that's what they do. They encourage these nut jobs to come out. And there's no club where you go to where there's a man performing in a giant banana costume. It's just bringing in nut jobs. And what happened was they ended up with a weaker batch. So I think they corrected that toward the end. I think that the last season or two really loaded with talented comics, and I think that was good. But the problem is now, you know, comedians are doing well on America's Got Talent, which is great, but you're up against people shooting flaming arrows and dogs jumping around, and it's very hard for someone who stands and talks and says funny things to compete with that.
Here's my comedic philosophy. I hate competitions. I absolutely despise them. When I started doing stand-up, like most people, granted, I'm in Columbus, Ohio at the time, it was an open mic competition, and it was always whoever got the most applause was the winner, and blah, blah, blah. And then you're always like, oh, that guy brought a bunch of people, and yada, yada. Mm-hmm. So there was a big turning point for me when I went up to Cleveland, and I performed at this club called It's Comedy. And I had won a bunch of competitions, but I desperately wanted to go and win one where nobody knew who I was. Like I had, and it was great. And then I thought, well, I'm going to put competitions behind me, because it is, man. And I'm sorry if this is boring for people who listen, but like you cannot, it's like comparing classical music with alternative. There's like some people like jazz and some people, you know, like hip hop. It's, you can't say that one is better. You can just say they're different. And I just, competitions are horrible. Just horrible.
Yeah.
But you got the press out of it. That's the important thing. Like that's something you got out of that I'll never get.
Well, you know, I even talked to newer comics who were doing competitions at the club level, they're very small festivals and this and that, and they ask me, is it good to do these contests? And I tell them, as long as you don't worry about winning or not, because the important thing is, are you going to go up and you're going to show the club that you can handle yourself on stage and you've got potential and that you're not just funny, but you're someone they would want around. That's what the benefit is, because the other stuff, it's all these things are out of your control. You can't, you don't know who knows who and all that stuff. And I even look at the season, you know, again, to go to Last Comic Standing that I did, the winner was John Reap, who I don't know if he really got too much of a bump out of winning the show. And the fourth place finisher was Amy Schumer, you know, who has gone on for an historic run. So it's whatever level it is, it's all what you make out of it. And I know that's tough because when you do it, it's easy to get pissed. Maybe that's the benefit for new comics. It's their first introduction to the unfair heartbreak of the comedy business.
I had this conversation with John Heffron. He won like season.
Oh yeah, he won season 3 or something.
Yeah, and he's been a friend of mine. He's originally from Michigan. I'm from Ohio, and whenever I'd play up in Detroit, we'd hang out. Whatever. He's a really good dude, and he knew exactly what he was doing in that competition.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm gonna be the aw shucks, I can't believe it, farm boy, who's like, I'm in, and it totally worked, and it was great, and he's a funny dude, and I'm happy that he won. In speaking to him after he won, we both had the same realization. There's always one more rung on the ladder, you know?
Yeah.
If you're like, oh, I just want to win an amateur night, and then it's like, oh, I just want to make money as a performer. Oh, I just want to be the feature act. Oh, I just want to be the headliner. Oh, I just want TV. Oh, I just want movies. Oh, I just want my own studio. Oh, there's always another rung. So don't get hung up on the rung you're on. Well, that's a t-shirt.
Well, I even feel it on a night-to-night basis where, not to get too philosophical about it, but when people try to advance the idea that a comedian's we're all tortured geniuses, I think we're flattering ourselves there. I mean, it does happen, but I do think that if you believe everything in the world is fine the way it is, you feel there's no compulsion to get on stage and talk to people.
Yeah.
But I know for myself that, you know, I've been doing this, it's going to be 17 years this summer, that you can't have that be the thing that fills you up, because that part of you, that void, will never get filled by the adulation of strangers with a 2-drink minimum. And I even feel it sometimes where I'll have a really good set at a club where you feel like, well, everything went according to plan, and everybody's, they want to talk to you, they want to... And I even feel it dissipating. By the time I get to my car, I'm already, you know, back in my usual hole, you know? And the crazy thing is the good feelings dissipate so quickly, but the stink of a bad set, there's ones I remember from years ago where I'd still my fist clench when I think about them.
There are it's like I'm talking to a clone. There are moments that were so bad, it's like they just happened. It's like they just happened. I can close my eyes and I can relive every horrible slow motion moment. And I could literally, like a standing ovation a couple months ago. Yeah, whatever. That's what I wanted. I mean, like, it's like, that's how it's supposed to go. But like, oh, so here we are dwelling on the horrible stuff. I don't want to do that. Really quickly, I don't want to forget. Like now, it seems like you're almost, and I don't know if this is where you want to be or if it's part of a master plan or whatever. I know you're doing the Tom Shalhoub. Tom Shalhoub became the host of Red Eye, so Shalhoub is doing a radio show, and you're a big piece of that. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Because you know, I made a decision earlier this year that I was going to do every media opportunity that was offered to me and every podcast that I could do. And I went on Tom's show and the producer said, oh, we love you. We'd love to have you back. When can you come back? And I said, I can come in every week. And they said, yeah, sure. So for me, it makes sense because I'll come in and, you know, I do the show once a week from 5 to 6. He has his comedians for the last hour when they do the lighter stories. And, you know, it's from 5 to 6, and then I just go do whatever else it is I have to do in New York City. So it works out great. The day moves around a little bit, so if people go to my schedule on my webpage, they can see when it's on. But it's a lot of fun, and Tom is a super cool dude, and it's good. It's just good to have that place where, you know, the fans of his show are very dedicated, and it's nice. It's a good experience, and you get to talk about some real stuff, which I enjoy.
Yeah, that's always like the catch, you know, and I always, and kudos to you and a tip of the cap that, because it, like, I found, like, and I'm seriously, I'm not trying to name drop, but like, I did jokes when I was on Tucker Carlson, and you could almost feel him being like, dude, don't be the joke guy. And like, it was a roll of the dice. It was a roll of the dice. I'm like, ooh, I'm up on current events and I can make it all funny. And I think for the comedians that listen to this show, it is it's a weird, you have no idea how weird it is to be on a news channel and they introduce you as the comedian. It's just like.
Yeah. Yeah. They told me that was a problem they had on Red Eye at the beginning, was that the comedians would come on and want to be serious, and the serious Fox people will come on and want to act goofy. And they told them, no, do what you do. But yeah, I noticed that the best moments on Red Eye were the interaction between guests. So I'll come up with some lines, but the most important thing is figure out what's your take? What's your point of view? And then worry about the joke after. And what's interesting about that is I started to do that for those shows, and I realized, you know, I could use a whole lot more of my act. That's what makes your act go to the next level.
It's funny, and like, but it's also, you know, I write for television too, and like some of the best the best shows, if you look back at quote unquote the best shows in sitcom, you almost know what the character is going to say before they say it. They have such a strong point of view, and just picking one out of the hat, Meathead would say something on All in the Family, then the camera just goes to Archie. And you can just tell, and the audience is already laughing. And I think it holds true for stand-up as well. If you're fortunate enough to have a strong point of view like that, it's just going to serve you well. Dude, this is awesome. I want to tell people about JoeDeVitoComedy.com. That's where they can keep track of what's
going on. It's JoeDeVito.com is the website, but on social media, it's at JoeDeVitoComedy.
There you go. See, you saved the day. Yeah. That's like a season pro. You did that. You go to JoeDeVito.com. That's where you can keep up with what's going on. And then Joe DeVito Comedy, that's your Instagram, and that's your Twitter.
And my Twitter.
And and they can see you doing the Turkish push-up thing.
The Turkish get-up, yes.
It's the Turkish get-up. You have to see this, you guys. Go search YouTube, search Facebook for Joe DeVito Turkish getup. It's this insane exercise that looks like it works. You're an incredibly fit dude. I'm terrified to even try it.
You mess up, you need some dental work. So it keeps you on your toes.
So you've got gigs this weekend. You're going to be at the Stress Factory.
I'm going to be at the Stress Factory in New Brunswick, New Jersey, Thursday through Sunday, and that's a very fun room, and I'm looking forward to it.
I have never played it. I'm incredibly jealous. We always run into each other at Governor's.
Yes, and I'm actually going to be at Governor's for New Year's Eve. Governor's in Levittown.
What? The accidental plug. The accidental plug. Joe, thank you so much. Man, nothing but the best. Tell Shalou I said hey. Congratulations on all your success. Thanks for doing this little show. And we will stay in touch, man. I will talk
to you. Thanks.
Yeah? Good talking to you, Joe. I'll see you next time.
And I know it's bad because my female friends have told me men lie about their height. How do you pull that off? The whole point is to meet the person. How do you show up 8 inches shorter than you said you were? You just keep moving around for the whole day so she can't get a read on you? And I say this as a short guy. I'm not trying to fool anyone. I don't put up pictures of me surrounded by chihuahuas. Throw off the depth perception. Short. You need something off the shelf? Can't help you. Something rolls under the couch, you have my number. And it goes both ways, okay? Because men lie about their height, women will lie about their size, and they're very crafty with the terminology they use. I know to read, to say voluptuous. I don't like the sound of that. Rubenesque. No one's used that word in 200 years. curvy. You're not fooling me with curvy again. I love curvy women. Here's the problem. Those curves, they're supposed to come back in at some point, okay? We want curvy like an hourglass, not like a wall clock. That's a ripoff. That's like me as a short guy saying I'm down to earth. But technically, I'm closer to the face of the planet.
Fantastic. I'm digging the new format. There's a zip. There's a you gotta go. I love the energy. Like it, if you've ever been in acting or whatever, you always want some kind of motivation for your character. We have motivation, Gypsy. We have motivation. It's little 20-minute hunks. I love it.
We have motivation in 20-minute hunks.
Well, sometimes here's the deal. Here's the trap.
I'm sorry.
I know that's great. Motivation and 20-minute hunks.
The other 23 hours and 40 minutes are just bleh.
Well, here's the great thing. Like as we experiment, and that's mm-hmm. what I've never been shy. Here's the things I've never been shy about. I am a freak, so in a year, don't go, what? Loftus is a freak. No, he would talk about it all the time on his podcast. and this whole thing is a giant experiment that we're figuring it out as we go. And we've recently, and hopefully we'll stick with it, we've changed the format a little bit. And it's effective. Like last week, we did like a greatest hit show. That was mm-hmm. fun and funny. However, this is something to take note of. I was talking to Andrew Apple yesterday, mm-hmm. who's our facts and figures, you know, numbers guy, and here's how we're doing. Da, da, da. This show, this little Loftus Party podcast, had its best month ever.
Well, yay!
Last month, yes. Now, to compare, like a moron, I don't have the numbers in front of me. The second week of this show, we were on iTunes new and noteworthy column. They're like, oh, here's a new podcast you think you might like. It was explosive. It
right.
was very big. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people – and people didn't know. They're like, oh, it's going to be this guy is a comedian. They're going to be telling jokes about politics. I think everyone assumed that
right.
it was going to be – like Donald Trump is the devil, Republicans are Nazis, and it wasn't that, and they quickly turned away.
Right.
But however, there were some big numbers there. Now, and it sounds hokey, it sounds corny, people are sharing, people are talking, wonderful things are bubbling up, and now we're growing. We've had a better month. We had a better month last month than we did when iTunes was like, go check them out. So that makes me happy, and that gives me a lot of pep in my step and a spring in my butt cheeks. It makes – it gets me out of bed.
If we ever get through a show without butt stuff, somebody tell us.
I don't think we can. I don't think we can get through a show without something about butt cheeks.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the other thing I want to bring up, side boob.
Side boob is terrible.
What?
Seriously.
I am a huge fan.
No, women go to great lengths to get the side boob taken care of because that just means your bra doesn't fit right.
Or it means you have incredibly attractive breasts and people can see the side of them. Like some – yeah. Like listen, I've seen some roly-poly-olies out there.
Right.
And you've got, you know, side gut.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, you get those multiple rolls and you're like, is that a boob? No, that's his gut. I'm a big fan of side boob. It's
okay.
Got to be the correct in the correct circumstances. Okay. So there you go. And I heard the disdain in your voice. I heard
it's not even disdain. It's just like, wow, go to great lengths to avoid that happening. And yeah.
Oh, there's a picture, whatever. Oh my gosh. We're so far off the track.
I know.
I've seen the, girls now are getting a lot of tattoos on their ribs. I think.
Ouch.
You know, a lot of times it's an arrow or it's a piece of, like a quote or scripture what I think it's, I think it's smoking hot. I saw a picture. There's this tattoo person that follows us on Twitter, and they posted a photograph, and I'm like, that's just smoking hot. It was like a field of stars that went like up the rib cage and like side boob. Just sexy as all get out. Okay.
The only reason I said ouch is because from people who've gotten a number of tattoos, they tell me anytime you're going over bones, it's really painful. So just ouch.
Yeah. And this is the time of year. And I apologize to the listeners who have encouraged me to get the tattoo. It's the time of year. I'm back in that zone. I'm thinking tattoo again.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm just terrified that I'll get addicted. That's really what it is. That like one tattoo will be great. And if one is good, then three is better. And then all of a sudden I'm going to have like a Mike Tyson thing on my forehead.
Yeah, no, dude, don't be the dude that gets a skeleton tattooed on his face and then walks away from a work program at jail. You're really easy to find.
I saw that.
You're really easy to find.
We were cracking up at work. Yeah. Like, when you get that tattoo, how do you expect to find a job? When do you go into the interview with a skull literally tattoo on your face going, I just feel like I could be a big part of the Chase Bank family. I just feel like I'd really fit in here at Human Resources.
Yeah. And then that guy that's was all over the freaking magazines a couple days ago or a couple weeks ago. I can't get a job because of my voluminous neck tattoos. No, you probably can't.
Yeah, you can't.
Why are you surprised?
You don't do it. You don't do it. You don't do it.
No.
Okay. Some other news going on in the world of entertainment. Hopefully you saw I was on Tucker Carlson. It was hosted by Brian Kilmeade. That was a blast. It was not the longest of segments. I guess it was normal. I was ready for a whole lot more. I had a blast. I really like that Brian Kilmeade guy. He seems very nice. He's a good dude. I want to stay in touch with him. It was fun being on the show. And this is what happens, man. People find out, and then all of a sudden I get a producer from Varney and Company that's on Fox Business, and they wanted to have me on. And here's the thing, and I've reflected because Stuart Varney, immigrant to this country, he's from England, he's asking me on the air, he's like, so you voted for Trump. Has that affected your business? I guess I should do it to Stuart Varney. Michael, has it affected your business? Has it affected you financially, your business? And I'm watching him, and I go, no, I don't think so. I've been in comedy for such a long time. I've worked in all these clubs. I've worked in television. I think people know that I'm a rational person. I'm not a Nazi, and I think it's going to be okay. And then Stuart Varney and the rest of the crew are like, okay. Well, I think it's going to – like they know something I don't know.
Right.
Like I'm this bright-eyed idiot. No, I think it's going to be fine. Man, if the hammer – I don't want the hammer to fall. I have faith in the people that I work with. We're not on the same political page, but I have to think it's going to be okay.
Right.
I don't want there to just be some huge, no, you'll never work again. That would be horrible. Here's what I want to be. I want to be the poster child for the guy who's relatively cool and kind of fun to hang out with, but you disagree with him politically. I don't want to be the poster child for yeeg. You better not tell anybody how you voted or it's over.
Right. Well, and both of those shows kind of covered that topic. And I'm like, gee, what are you doing? Giving people ideas? Why don't you just highlight this fun and funny guy who happened to say he voted for Trump in a fun and funny way and laugh with him like it shouldn't be a big deal?
Yes.
Wouldn't that be nice?
However, if you take a step back from it, and I've literally, Gypsy, I've had these thoughts. Like you need conflict. There has to be conflict. So I can see why they would steer the conversation in that direction. That's an interesting thing. Then there's stakes. Oh, here's this comedian who admits he voted for Trump. What's going to happen? Is the hammer going to fall? You know, it's like dun, dun, dun. But if I'm just on there telling jokes about Hillary Clinton or whatever, that's kind of boring. So I can see why they steered it in that direction. However, that made me think that it should be just, here's a funny guy who happens to think differently. I agree with you 110%.
I think if we could live in that world, life would be a lot more fun.
We can live in that world.
We do live in that world. We live in that world. If the rest of the world could catch up with us, that would be amazing.
We are just in sync today.
Right?
We are completely in sync. It's wonderful, because that's exactly what we're doing. Like, sometimes the totality of it is overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we are no BS. We're doing it. I'm looking at our website right now. I'm looking at the Loftus Party website. You've got a wonderful review of The Punisher. You've got a little blog that I wrote that's a review of Star Wars Battlefront. You've got something about the Tennessee Vols and college football. It's just so much wonderful. It's not all politics, politics, politics. It's cool stuff. It's stuff that's working. We're doing it. Like, when other people are sitting around stomping their feet, gnashing their teeth, meh, 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 it's so horrible. They just sit there like douchey bumps on a log. I am so happy and so proud that we're doing this. It's awesome. We're creating content. We're sharing content. There's new videos every week. There's the podcast. It's the whole thing. I'm so excited.
We are the happy warriors.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that needs to actually a lot of stuff that needs to stop happening, like the estate tax. And while we're on that path, we're going to have a good time doing it.
Precisely. And we're going to talk about sex, and we're going to talk about video games. We're going to talk about movies while we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got to have a life first.
Yep.
You got to have a life first and then be political. Now, some people, granted, they're going to be political first and that's their life. And that's wonderful. I celebrate you and the choices that you've made.
However,
I want to have a good time. That's the whole reason I want less government, is so I can have without the man bringing me down. It's awesome. It's awesome. And I'm thrilled. The podcast is getting bigger and bigger. The YouTube. Oh, my gosh. That really helps when you're on the Fox Business and on the Tucker Carlson show. That was a wonderful little boon, because a lot of people found it.
It also helps when you have the Loftus Party Chiron.
Good job, son.
Good job.
That was fun. And like, I don't know, seriously, Gypsy, I don't know what my – I don't think I have an official title. But like, you look at it, it's like editor-in-chief of the Loftus Party.com. I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. Go for it.
That's me. You're the founder.
I'm the founder. I'm the Ray Kroc.
I should have been on that Chiron.
There you go. That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
You took my job, you bastard.
I took your job.
You can have
it. Okay, so no. I mean, no. I'm gonna keep submitting, and I still want Watch's Girl to review the Shiny Heiny. I just think that's too funny. I mentioned it weeks ago. Nothing has happened. I'm not gonna let that go. In some more news, other than it's just been a big Loftus Party love fest here, and I don't care about that. I think that's awesome. And hey, if you guys make something, I'll help you celebrate it. Right? It's like we have decorated a room, and I want some compliments. I saw Thor, and it was a happy, sad day for me. Watching this movie, first of all, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Just fantastic. And well, oh my gosh, Kate Blanchett, I don't know if she could have been sexier. I really don't know. I guess I still have a soft spot in my heart for goth chicks, but she was like the ultimate goth sex villain woman. I thought she was awesome.
Yep.
The use of the Immigrant Song by Led Zeppelin was brilliant.
Oh, it was
absolutely
awesome.
Brilliant. There was the setup where they're like, okay, here's this song, and here's what happens when this song plays.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're like, okay, so there's the expectation. Then in the third act of the movie, they bring it again in a set piece that is just worth the price of admission.
Yes, it was.
Like, I would pay, I'm not kidding, I would pay $15, $20 just to see that again.
Yep.
Like, boom, it was fantastic. And the Valkyrie girl was outstanding. Mm-hmm. Now, here's my criticism. Here it comes. Too much comedy. It was so funny, and the comedy worked so well. If they do another one, and I imagine they will, they'll go past it. And then once you go past it, there's no going back. Once you start, Thor is just a joke machine, and it's all ba 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 da ba da ba da ba. You can't go back to being serious. So Marvel Comics, and granted, they've been brilliant in mm-hmm. the way they've been laying these out, and it's just absolute brilliance. I'm worried that they're going to go too far, because once you go to those jokes, you can't go back to being serious.
Well, we'll see, because I actually liked seeing Chris Hemsworth kind of smile, because he didn't really smile in any, you know what I mean? And he's got a great smile. So
he's hilarious.
Right.
Listen, I loved it. I loved it, and I laughed a lot. The executives, the people from the movie studio are going to go, oh, if a little bit of comedy was good, more will be better. And then it'll become a cartoon.
Well, and I loved the back to mischievous Loki.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
Well, you know about my Loki thing, so.
Yeah, and that's fine. I celebrate that. Mm-hmm. I know you want to – you have a fantasy about you and Loki, and that's fantastic.
No, I just
have
want him
question.
To do well.
It's no – if you want to bang Loki, I think you can say that. You can own that. Because, like, it's like when – like, my wife and I have these lists, mm-hmm. or we used to have them. We don't have them anymore. You know, you got your list of, like, I would – no, you can bang that celebrity. You could totally. I would let you – you know, you have the list. Oh, you want to have sex with blah, blah, blah? Sure. Okay, fine. And then you move to L.A. and you start meeting him. And you're like, hey, that list thing isn't funny anymore.
Right. Well, no, but I have to do one thing with all of that. I have to give Lisa Bonet some serious props.
Lisa Bonet?
She's like 10 years older than Jason Momoa, and she nabbed him. They're married.
Whoa, she's banging Aquaman?
Yeah.
Wow. Good for him.
Good for her.
Oh, Lisa Bonet has been on my list since Cosby.
Right?
That girl, and wasn't she with Lenny Kravitz for the longest time?
Yep.
Oh, boy. Yeah, she's a very, very exotic-looking sexy girl.
She is my new cougar role model. Like, that.
That's a good one.
That's
a good one to have. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was good. Props to you, Lisa. Props to you.
Okay, we've got the Infinity War coming up. That's just how you do it. That's just how you do it. You get excited about that trailer. It's the culmination of 10 years of work by Marvel Comics. Good job to everybody on Team Marvel. They have successfully done it's kind of almost sad to watch DC try to keep up with Justice League and do their whole thing. It's like, you guys, not so much. I haven't even seen Justice League yet. You know what it is? It's like I know I'm going to be disappointed. So I'm just kind of holding off.
You know, I won't say that I was disappointed. It was entertaining, right?
Okay.
But it doesn't tie everything together like the Marvel series did. You're not as emotionally – I mean, the only character I'm truly emotionally invested in the DC world is Gal Gadot. So.
Yeah. Yeah, Wonder Woman is interesting. Batman should be interesting.
Yeah, no. Batfleck is bad.
Affleck, it's not his fault. I tell you what, if from the look at it and from how you want the character to act, that works. Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne, Batman, that works. It's the writers. It's the writers.
Oh,
it's the producers.
Just...
You know what? And I take it back. It's probably not even the writers because they take their marching offers orders from the studio. It's the studio.
Yeah,
it's at the top. The fish heads from the fish rots from the head down.
He was just so depressing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Superman should be interesting. Green Arrow is not even in it. That's blah, blah, blah. There's lots of problems there. Okay. Yeah. So that is going to wrap it up for this show. Well, we're still going to do Michaeltopias. I got a Michaeltopia, and it's a cheap one, but damn it, I'm doing it.
Go ahead.
See, here's how in the real world, there's crazy rules and laws to live by, and it doesn't work out. However, in Michaeltopia, there's a different set of rules, and everything's wonderful. So here we go with my Michaeltopia. In Michaeltopia, everybody goes to theloftusparty.com, and they click on party gear, and that's where they get their stocking stuffers and their gifts. It's amazing to watch. When people look at our logo, and it hit me again the other day, we put out a video – my interview with Dana Lash, and she was just insanely delighted with our logo. She's like, that needs to exist in nature. And when we were at CPAC last year,
mm-hmm.
Gypsy, everybody's delighted with the logo. That's a great Christmas present. Get a coffee mug, get a travel mug, get a t-shirt. People dig it. And you're supporting a great cause. It keeps us on the air. It keeps us creating new content and sharing it. And we're having a good time. So that's what people do in my Michaeltopia. How about you?
Here's something people don't do in my Michaeltopia. When you are a regular at a certain type of establishment and you are loyal for the entire football season to being there to watch certain things, college football, you don't, as the manager of that restaurant, take reservations from people who never go there and tell people who always go there you don't have a seat.
Ooh, bad call.
Yeah.
Bad call. You got to keep your regulars happy first.
I got a seat, but there. I live in Georgia. Go Dogs. Yay, we won. But there's this huge crew of University of Miami fans that come into that particular establishment every Saturday and have the back room. They rented it out yesterday for a birthday party for a 70-year-old. So when the Miami guys got there at 8 for their game, they literally lost their minds.
Wow. That's just someone who wasn't thinking.
Wasn't thinking at all.
Yeah. And I guarantee that'll leave a mark and they will fix it next time. You guys, it was an awesome show. Thanks for tuning in. Do me a favor. I have to ask. Go to iTunes, leave a review, click some stars. The numbers are great. And so I just want to keep it going. I just don't want it to stop. I'm a junkie for this stuff. You guys are awesome. You're all sexy as hell. And I adore your choice in underwear. Side boobs awesome. See you next time.